You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and today I'm speaking with Jeremy Walters, Sustainability Ambassador for Republic Services. Jeremy helps to develop and execute recycling education programs and serves as a spokesperson for Republic's nationwide Recycling Simplified education campaign. November 15th is America Recycles Day, and nearly 40% of Americans don't believe plastic is recycled or they're unsure. Jeremy, thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, Heather, thank you for having me.
So, did you do some kind of survey? Can you let us know where you got some information about what Americans are thinking about recycling these days?
Yeah, you know, every America Recycles Day is an opportunity for us to re-educate the public around recycling. And specifically this year, we sent out a nationwide consumer survey specifically geared towards plastic to understand where maybe there's some educational opportunities, where the misconceptions lie around plastics recycling, and trying to clear up some of that confusion.
What is some of the confusion around plastics recycling?
Well, interestingly enough, when we asked the consumers how confident they were in their plastics recycling knowledge, 64% actually said that they were confident that they knew what types of plastic were recyclable. But then overwhelmingly, over 60% of those same respondents are incorrectly recycling flexible plastics. And flexible plastics are one of the biggest problems that we see at our, not only our Las Vegas Recycling Center, but recycling centers across the nation.
Okay, what constitutes flexible plastic? Because, I mean, if I look at a water bottle, I could call it flexible or I could call it not flexible. So I'm not even sure.
Yeah, so what we mean by flexible plastic is think of like bags and wrappers, right? A grocery bag, bubble wrap. If you frequently shop on Amazon, those satchels that your package comes in, think bags and wrappers. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about flexibles.
Okay, and so then which plastics are good to recycle?
So those are what we call hard plastics, the bottles, the jugs, the tubs. More specifically, plastic number 1, 2, and 5. But generally speaking, what we're looking for are those rigid plastic containers.
Okay. So I think some of the confusion around grocery bags might come from the fact that there are so-called recycling receptacles at certain stores where they allow you to deposit your old grocery bags. And a lot of people might think that those are getting recycled and therefore you can put those in the bin.
Yeah, so that's a great call out, because those receptacles at the grocery store, if you want to recycle your grocery bags and other flexible plastics, that's what you have to do with them. You have to take them back to the store. And the reason for that is they are now source separated. In your curbside recycling bin, all your recyclables, whether it be plastic, metal, glass, paper, or cardboard, it's all mixed together and it has to go through a very large process with moving parts to separate it all. Those flexible plastics in a recycling center actually wrap and tangle around the sorting equipment. So when you drop it back to the grocery store, they can take that whole bundle of flexible plastic right to a secondary recycling center where they can then process it into new materials. But for curbside recycling, you cannot put flexible plastics in your curbside bin.
Okay. Now, I had two people point blank tell me about maybe 3-4 weeks ago that even water bottles, which we would consider rigid plastic, are not recycled. They told me that, oh, they tell you to put your recyclables in the recycle bin, but then they just dump them all together in the dump with the garbage and they don't actually recycle them. Where do myths like this come from?
That's a great question, and one I wish I had the answer to, because I'm standing over here right now at our 110,000 square foot recycling center, and I'm watching plastic water bottles and jugs go through our recycling system. When you place it in your curbside bin, it's coming to a recycling center just like this. We're going to separate it out, we're going to bale it, and then send it off to be repurposed or reprocessed into new materials. Now, what happens is if you throw a plastic water bottle in your trash can, that's where it's destined. It's destined for the trash. We don't have the means, the capability to sort through the trash. So it's imperative that when you have a good recyclable item that is accepted, it makes it into your curbside recycling bin.
Yeah, so I was right in this conversation I'm talking about. But the funny thing is, so these people had given up on recycling they no longer separated recyclables into the recycle bin because they were convinced that they were all just going to end up in the dump anyway. So they just started throwing recyclable materials into the trash.
Yeah, and that creates a huge set of problems here at the recycling center. Again, 110,000 square foot facility. So you can imagine the size of this place. And it is designed to specifically separate recyclables from one another. When you start throwing trash into the recycling, that creates challenges either from the machinery standpoint, our employees, or even on the back end, if the machines or people miss things. If you throw trash, like surprisingly enough, the holidays, we see food waste. If someone throws, you know, the remnants of their turkey from Thanksgiving in the recycling bin, and that's getting jumbled and jarred around, it's going to ruin the paper and cardboard. And that's where good recyclables can then end up in the landfill if they become too soiled to recover.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we can do rigid plastics, bottles, jugs, we can do cans, we can do glass bottles, glass jars.
And paper and cardboard.
Okay, awesome. Now, what kind of preparation needs to be done before it's thrown in the bin? Because when I was a kid and recycling started, we were always told to rinse everything really well before putting it in the recycle bin.
Yeah, and we ask the same thing. You don't have to sit there and spend minutes on end rinsing something out, but just a very quick effort. Think of like a pasta sauce jar. You want to rinse out that residual pasta sauce, you know, squirt a little bit of water in there, swirl it around, tap it dry before you throw it in the recycling bin. And for the reason I gave along the lines of the turkey, right? Paper and cardboard is very fragile. If it gets soiled with food or liquid, we then have to throw it away. So practice empty, clean, dry when it comes to any type of container, whether be plastic, metal, or glass.
Okay, and if it's a glass jar, should we put the lid back on or leave the lid off?
Either or, it doesn't matter. Glass, through our process, actually goes across a glass breaker screen, so it's going to get crushed up, and the lid will get separated here at the recycling center.
Perfect. Okay. What other information would you like listeners to know about recycling?
I would just encourage people to find out more about recycling, more about what they can and can't do. There are a lot of those misconceptions. We touched on a number of them, especially here in Las Vegas. Our recycling program has changed over the last decade or so. We have the means to recycle so much more, but people aren't always throwing things in the recycling bin in the first place. And demand, especially for recycled plastics, has never been stronger. There's major brands that are setting ambitious targets for more recycled content in their packaging. So it's so important to keep these things out of the landfill. Make sure you're putting them in the recycling bin to begin with.
Awesome. Okay. So where can listeners go to learn more about recycling in general or about their specific services? Because I'm assuming pretty much every listener has Republic as their service provider as well.
Yeah, so today is a great day. We're leading into America Recycles Day. You can check out republicservices.com/AmericaRecyclesDay. Through that, you can actually find your local services, but specifically if you're looking for just Las Vegas information, whether it's even about bulk pickup, you can check out republicservices.com/Southern Nevada.
Okay, awesome. So republicservices.com/AmericaRecyclesDay is where you go for information about America Recycles Day and about what Jeremy's talking about today. If you want to find out about your specific pickups, certain days are bulk, certain days are not bulk, go to republicservices.com/Southern Nevada. And obviously you can get to those places. So the main website to remember, republicservices.com. And Jeremy, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting people know more about recycling and getting rid of some of those myths. And I think it's interesting to hear about the misconceptions and to talk about it, because that's the only way that we can make the truth come out, is to have the conversation. So thank you so much, Jeremy. I appreciate your time.
Anytime. Thank you for having me on.
When a student lacks some of the most basic needs,
like food, clothing, and school supplies,
it can be challenging to even attend school.
It can be hard to study, tough to concentrate, impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue every day.
Out in the community, there are great resources for students, and we bring these resources directly to the students who need them most.
We work to ensure that they have everything they need to re-engage in learning in the classroom and at home,
including access to technology, learning materials,
and even emotional support.
By forging caring relationships with students and bringing communities of support to them,
our staff works to achieve equitable learning conditions so all kids can succeed in school and in life. And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
To learn more, visit communitiesinschools.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me today is Nicola Soros, president of Kelly Education. The organization recently conducted a survey of business leaders to better understand the state of education and teacher supply. Nicola, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you, Heather, for having me.
So what exactly is Kelly Education?
So Kelly Education is the largest workforce solutions organization partnering with K-12 higher education throughout the U.S. We supply substitute teachers. We also hire teachers. We do executive search for superintendents. Anything that can be outsourced today within a school or institution, we're a talent provider of those services.
Okay, so it's connected with the Kelly Staffing Services that most people are familiar with?
Correct. We are a specialty division of Kelly Services.
Nice. Okay. So what is the current state of education in the country?
Yeah, so great question. So, you know, the last couple of years, and well before the pandemic, the country has been experiencing a major national teaching shortage. And in fact, Heather, I would characterize it as a national crisis and a crisis that we need to address extremely rapidly. And in fact, we just recently launched a research survey with the business community, as a matter of fact. Every year we do a big research project based on trying to, you know, provide solutions to this actual problem that we have. And it was so interesting to get the feedback that we did. We surveyed over 2,000 business leaders that comprised of about CEOs, CHROs, CFOs, you know, executive level leadership, mid-management, in terms of what they thought about the national teacher shortage and potentially solutions that would support that. You know, it was interesting that 91% of those participants agreed that the national teacher shortage will leave a future workforce unprepared to support business within the next 5 years. Now, I will tell you, there are lots of reasons, not just one reason for the actual national teacher shortage. But if I may, I'd like to give a couple of those reasons.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably first and foremost, yeah, our teachers are really burned out. And particularly, the pandemic really exacerbated that. And teacher salaries are definitely not where they should be with their industry counterparts. And one of the other reasons, teachers don't feel very safe within the physical environment that they support and work in. So as we know, we have experienced a high number of school shootings. You know, just even most recently in 2021, we had the most of 34 active incidences. And then, of course, you know, to prepare to be a teacher in their undergraduate program, many of our, you know, educators take college loans. So the average college debt for a teacher candidate when they graduate is about $58,700. And then one in seven teachers, which I think is incredible, owes maybe over $100,000 to pay back their tuition, which is almost impossible over a career, you know, lifetime of salary to pay back. And then, of course, you know, the one thing that I think is really alarming, you know, in the early 2000s, 10% of incoming freshmen into their undergraduate programs were pursuing an education degree. You know, fast forward today, that number has declined rapidly. And I can tell you probably the largest decline is about 35% of students no longer pursuing education as a degree or a profession. So if you put all of that together, it's sort of, you know, a perfect storm of reasons and events that are now contributing to this major, major talent gap that we're experiencing.
Wow. Okay. So obviously we've identified a lot of problems around the education industry and the reason for there being a current teacher shortage. But we've got the problem. What is the solution that you see could turn this around?
Yeah. So, you know, when we surveyed our business leaders, they had some very thoughtful insights in terms of how they would support different kinds of solutions. So just if I can just highlight a couple.
Sure.
One of their major areas was, you know, advocating for policy changes. like increasing teacher salaries, like also benefits, and have it, from a national perspective that those are mandates. Also, creating accessible pathways for folks that might be in a current career now looking to switch to a different career. So as an example of that, we've seen a lot of healthcare professionals raise their hands to be substitute teachers wanting to experience what it's like in the classroom. They may have been burnt out from the pandemic in their current jobs, but they're still purpose-driven professionals. They still want to help. So what better way if an RN or maybe a physician assistant who has sort of a science degree or a STEM degree is a great transfer of skills application into the classroom, into like STEM disciplines. Also, I touched on this before, we have to improve school safety. We have to improve mental health wellness programs and services, and not just for our students, but also for our teachers. Also, one of the other solutions that were put forth was supporting a national tuition school subsidy for teachers in training. What that could look like, maybe having an undergrad tuition that could be majority paid for with years of committed service. Then also year-round discounts, just like we give our military veterans, and possibly maybe subsidies towards affordable housing. And so when we think about, those urban areas and cities, like I think about San Francisco, I think about, very high cost of living, potentially maybe doing something like that. And when you put all that together as examples of those different solutions, that to me can be game changer. That's really kind of changing, the calculus on being able to solve this problem.
Okay. So if listeners would like to find out more about the situation or about the survey you did, maybe get involved somehow in making a difference on their end, where do they go for more information?
Yeah, so we are making the full research report available for free. Your audience can access this own website, educationworkforceinsights.com, educationworkforceinsights.com.
Okay, so once again, educationworkforceinsights.com is the place to go, educationworkforceinsights.com, and that will allow you to access the survey that they did and all the data and all the answers. There's some fascinating stuff there. So once again, educationworkforceinsights.com. And Nicola, I want to thank you so much for being here and bringing light to the situation and letting us know what people can do, and the fact that the business community is concerned and ready to take action is amazing. So thank you so much for your time, Nicola.
Yeah, thank you for your interest. Thank you, Heather. Have a great day.
The future depends on teachers. Every day, teachers are shaping our tomorrows, starting their students on journeys that will change the course of history. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist will make preventing pandemics their life's work, sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who will help combat climate change, and generating possibilities for a student who will be the first in their family to graduate college. It all starts with teachers who meet challenges with creativity, who reinvent education for the future, who work towards a school system that lifts up every child, regardless of race, income, or zip code, and who enable the full potential of our students, our communities, and our country. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Shape the future. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I gotta tell you, I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too, but I'm glad we are.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and life experiences come together through conversation, and it feels good.
Wow, your story is so...
Interesting?
Yeah.
When people actually sit down, talk, and listen to one another, they can break down boundaries and connect as human beings. At lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep, you can listen to amazing, life-changing conversations and find simple tools to start a conversation of your own.
I know one thing. This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together by having the courage to start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Andrea Clemis, Chief Medical Officer of MDVIP. MDVIP leads the market in membership-based healthcare with a national network of over 1,000 primary care physicians. They recently conducted a poll showing that most Americans want to take steps to live healthier for a longer life, yet over half also admit they plan more for their financial future than their own health. Andrea, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So, what exactly is MDVIP?
MDVIP is a national network of primary care physicians that specialize in preventive care. Unlike traditional medicine, MDVIP physicians have the time, the tools, and the technology to partner with their patients, customize in-depth testing, and really help coach you to achieve your wellness goals.
Okay. Now, what exactly did your recent poll discover?
Well, we did a longevity IQ survey. And the survey showed that 90% of Americans want to live longer, but 75% of people failed the quiz. So they really don't know what they need to do to live a longer, healthier life.
Okay, and what do you recommend people do if they want to live a longer, healthier life?
Well, there's really no secret to it, but they are the hardest things to do. The critical factors that are important early in your life are eating right, exercising, sleeping well, managing your stress. But there are some other components people don't know as much about. That's coaching. You need help, like with a primary care physician who can coach you to keep up those good habits, to know really what to tell you to eat or how to exercise. And then social interaction, your community is very important to help you live a long, healthy life.
Okay. Do you think it's that people don't know what to do to live a longer, healthier life, or they know and they just choose not to because it's too much work or they don't have time or whatever the excuse is?
I think it's that it's very hard. It's hard to eat healthy, say if you're even somebody who travels a lot and you're grabbing food in an airport or just eating those peanuts, or they don't give peanuts anymore on the airplane, but the almonds on the airplane or the cookies. Yeah. So, you know, they're very hard things to do and to keep up. And that's why you need that social support, your community, and you need a physician can really help you. And I think the other piece is having small goals. You know, if you just say, I'm going to lose 50 pounds, that's very daunting. But if you say, well, let me hope I lose a couple of pounds over the next month, that's a little bit more attainable goal. And those short wins go a long way.
Yeah. Now, we recently spent a couple of years kind of insulated from other people. We didn't have a lot of social connections during the pandemic. And a lot of, you know, it was pretty common for people to gain weight during the pandemic or to stop those habits that they previously had. What ways did you find that people have felt with regards to their health and their age during that pandemic?
You know, it's funny because we did some surveys during the pandemic also and found that people thought that they were losing their mind or going crazy. So mental health was a real problem during the pandemic and continues to be. So making sure that you're screened for those things, because if you're depressed, you really don't want to work on eating healthy or exercising. One of the other things we found in one of our earlier MDVIP surveys was that some people actually did better during the pandemic because they were home, so they got to exercise and eat right. Then again, there were many who said they drank more and ate more. So it's never too late to improve your health. And I think that's one of the key findings from this survey is start now, because living a long, healthy life is better than a long, unhealthy life.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you brought up a good point there. You mentioned mental health, and typically what we've been talking about is physical health. And when people say they want to live a long, healthy life, they're usually referring to physical health. But mental health is obviously a big part of it as well. So kind of a chicken and egg scenario, which is more important? Is it mental health leads to physical health, or physical health leads to mental health, or do they just walk hand in hand?
I think they walk hand in hand. There are physical things that increase your risks for mental health, and then things like depression can increase your risk for dementia, not living a longer life. So you have to work on them both. And that's why getting screened is so important. You know, people talk all the time about, well, you know, I feel a little down or I'm a little stressed out from work. But going to your primary care physician who can screen you for anxiety or depression, and then they can help coach you, work on it, you know, if you needed medication, but all of those things, because you're not going to want to eat right and exercise if you're depressed or you have an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to live a long, healthy life if you have any of those things either.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so where can listeners go to find out more information about living a healthy life or even take a look at the poll results?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be great to go take the quiz at mdvip.com/longevityIQ, because then they can, you know, 75% of people failed and they didn't know things like life expectancy is decreasing in America, or that a glass of wine or beer can shrink your brain. So they need to learn these sort of things so that they can work with a doctor and their community to help support them so they can live healthier.
Okay, awesome. So mdvip.com/longevityIQ is the website to go to, mdvip.com/longevityIQ. You can take the test there, find out more information about living a long and healthy life, and access the resources there as well. Dr. Andrea Clemes, I want to thank you so much for being here today and talking to us about this, letting people know more about what they can do and where they can find out where they stand in this whole situation and what they can do to improve their own lives. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Heather.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome to I'm Listening, an Odyssey Radio mental health initiative, because talk has the power to save lives. I'm Heather Vail, and today I'm speaking with Cindy Karpluck, licensed clinical social worker and executive director of Silver State Health's Certified Community Behavioral Health Center, or CCBHC. Cindy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So what exactly is Silver State Health's Certified Community Behavioral Health Center?
Well, a Certified Community Behavioral Health Center is a wraparound service, a little different than a regular mental health agency or clinic. Back in 2017, Congress mandated or put out for the nation, they selected 8 states, Nevada being one of them, to be demonstration states to see if this was actually even a viable option. And so Certified Community Behavioral Health Centers, what we do is we look at every aspect of the person to what is affecting the mental health of the person. Instead of just looking at its depression or its anxiety, we look at every aspect that comes into affecting that. So it may be that you can't pay your bills. It may be that you're recovering from a meth addiction and your teeth may have been messed up by that. And so you don't like smiling anymore. And that just causes you to be very self-conscious and so forth. And then people think that you're mean. And so they're responding to you based off of that. And so we get you connected to a dentist to help get that taken care of. It may be a lot of different things that are happening, but we look at the whole person as opposed to just one piece. So once they realize that this is working, that it works so well, and honestly, Nevada did such a good job with it, they decided to do what's called an expansion project. So now all states have it.
Nice. Okay. So what exactly is the difference between mental health and behavioral health?
So basically, mental health, we're just really talking about the function of the brain. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is what we're thinking and how that is affecting our emotions. But we're not incorporating that other piece, which is how we are behaving. And our behaviors really are what other people notice, right?
Yeah.
And so that is actually the bigger piece. So our thoughts actually impact our emotions. Our emotions impact our behaviors or our actions. And those actions, those behaviors impact our thoughts. It's a cyclical thing. So behavioral health is a holistic thing. It has to do with the whole person as opposed to just that one piece. It would be like me going to the doctor for a physical thing and them only telling me to deal with the one piece, like I've hurt my arm, and they tell me, okay, well, we're just going to keep that in a sling and we're not going to tell you about the other part, like don't lift anything with that, you're just going to keep in a sling. Right?
Yeah.
We're not dealing with the whole piece of it. So behavioral health, we really have to deal with the behaviors that impact the mental health piece. Mental health is just one part of it. It's not the whole thing. Behavioral health is actually being holistic. And even the Surgeon General has gotten to the point where he's actually has these action plans that come out. They're actually action plans that come out every year for suicide prevention that are talking about behavioral health versus mental health, and that we have to start doing things in a team as teams to approach behavioral health instead of mental health.
Okay. Now, when you talk about thoughts affecting our emotions, which affect our actions, which affect our thoughts, and so on and so forth, it's similar to personal development teachings on how to achieve success, basically by starting with positive or inspirational thoughts, and then that affects emotions and actions. So how can we turn it all around and use the same pattern, this natural pattern that we have, to get positive results instead of negative spiraling out of control?
You know, it's more than just positive thoughts. Mm-hmm. Because that's a real easy way to get somebody into a very depressive state, because then they start thinking, well, I can't be positive, so there's something wrong with me.
Right, exactly.
And that's not the fact. That's not the truth. The truth of things are is that we have to recognize, what am I thinking that is causing these emotions to come up for me? And then what is causing those behaviors to happen? It is not, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not creating these things in my life because I'm thinking these things. It's, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? That's
right.
Really not the question. It's, how am I dealing with these things that are coming up for me?
Right. Now, with the thought being basically the foundation that causes that pattern, how do you uncover what that underlying thought is so that you can deal with the behavior that came out of it?
Right. So it's all about slowing things down.
Okay.
So emotions happen at, you know, I used to always tell my clients when I was doing therapy, emotions happen 190 miles an hour. It's like getting on a roller coaster ride with no seatbelt and no safety bar, right? So basically, you get on that ride and eventually you get thrown off of the roller coaster and you land on somebody and boom, both of you end up hurt.
Yeah.
So it's about slowing things down. not getting on the ride in the first place. So if we can slow things down by connecting to what is the thought that is making all of this happen, then we can actually start controlling what is happening to me in the emotional state, right? Mm-hmm. So we do this by mindfulness.
Okay.
Mindfulness happens in the logic center of the brain, not in the emotional center of the brain. Mindfulness is actually, it's not a meditation. You know, all meditation is a form of mindfulness, but all mindfulness is not a form of meditation. So mindfulness is actually just being in your moment, being aware of where am I at and what's going on for me in this moment. It's also recognizing that your emotions, they're neither good nor bad. This is the problem, what happens for many people. Emotions are there to tell us something. So if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling mad, that emotion is not bad. That emotion is just an emotion. And so what am I supposed to be doing with that? I need to slow it down rather than resisting it, because what I resist is going to persist. Mm-hmm. Rather than resisting it, I embrace it. I say, okay, what am I feeling in this moment? Why am I feeling this? And then what do I need to do with it? Once I'm able to slow it down and actually interact with it, sit in the discomfort of it and move through it, then it dissipates. And then I'm able to move to some better behaviors.
Okay. So quite often, there still seems to be a stigma around seeking treatment for mental health. You know, it goes back to media and movies labeling people as crazy and psycho, and nobody wants to be crazy or psycho, of course. So how do we remove all of that stigma around seeking treatment so that people can feel good about it?
I believe one of the first places we have to start is we have to recognize that getting treatment for behavioral health should be just the same as getting treatment for if I have the flu or if I am physically ill. Our brain is a part of our physical body. And so it should be just as normalized as if I'm not feeling well, then I go to the doctor. Well, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that if I'm not feeling well, that is not a commentary on me as a person. Then why should, if I'm feeling some type of way mentally, why is that a commentary on me as a person?
Right.
Again, you know, relating back to when I was, you know, doing therapy, I often told people, do not label yourself as bipolar. Do not label yourself as depressed. I am suffering from bipolar disorder. I'm suffering from depression, right?
Okay.
And it really does shift the dynamic for you, as opposed to, you know, people who are given a diagnosis of cancer do not walk around saying, hey, I'm cancer.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So
yeah. Good point. Now, if someone is dealing with depression, anxiety, or trauma, often they decide to just tough it out because they think it's just sadness, it's just part of life, it's no big deal. How should they actually deal with those issues?
Well, I think it has to be done on a case-by-case basis. If it is causing you to have problems in your day-to-day life, if it is affecting your activities of daily living, you can't get out of bed, or it's a real struggle to get out of bed, you're that parent and you're having a real hard time interacting with your kids, or you find that you're snapping at them, you go to work and you're getting written up on a regular basis because you're not doing what you used to be doing. Yeah, those are signals that you probably need to get some help. If you find that you are drinking or using some other substance to cope, if you are staring at the television for days, or you're shopping to the extent that you are spending the rent or mortgage, These are all symptoms. These are all things that are saying there's something bigger going on and I need to seek some professional help. The professional is not going to tell you how to fix this. The professional is your guide on this journey because you are the expert on your life. They're just going to help you find your own answers. On the other hand, if you are able to talk to someone, if you're, you know, you have your sister, your brother, your best friend, your spouse, whomever that you can talk to and you can talk it out and find those resolutions, then you don't need to go that way. You are the person who really knows. You know, if you have a splinter and you have someone that can come with the tweezers and get it out for you, then you obviously don't need to go to the emergency room.
Yeah. Okay. So sometimes figuring out what the issue is requires kind of an in-depth pulling apart of all the puzzle pieces and looking beneath. And often it stems back to childhood. But do mental health and behavioral health issues always come from childhood trauma, or can they happen along the way, along the journey of life?
The research is showing that a large percentage of them are coming from childhood. The ACEs study showed us in the 80s, they did that, and they are actually still doing that on an ongoing basis. The Adverse Childhood Experiences study was done by Kaiser and the CDC, and they did this together. And it was a different study because they used Kaiser Permanente's clientele, as opposed to where most studies are done with college students. This was done with Kaiser's patients. And it found that a large percentage of the folks had what we call ACE scores. And so this is adverse childhood experiences. And these experiences could be anywhere from having a parent or an adult authority figure in your life who talked to you in a way that was demeaning, putting you down, or was actually physically abusive. Mm-hmm. Or you watched your parent, one of your parents being abused, or one of your parents or the guardian had an alcohol or substance problem, or they were constantly being incarcerated. So you never knew when the cops were going to come in and drag them off to jail, or you didn't know whether you were going to eat that night, or you were never taken to the doctor. There were 10 specific things that were asked. And basically, they were yes, no questions. And if you answered yes, then these were positive adverse childhood experiences.
Okay.
And basically, if you had 4 or more, then you had a higher risk of physical problems in adulthood, being incarcerated in adulthood, having some type of addictive personality in adulthood, including substance use and addictive substance use problems, and actually dying 20 years earlier.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are a majority of us that actually do have that higher level ACEs. And so it is quite prevalent. You know, are there folks that along the way? Absolutely. There are people that do have a fairly great childhood and something happens to them. Trauma is not, PTSD is not something that is exclusively military. You can, and what is trauma for one person may not be trauma for someone else. That person who was in a car accident who for, you know, 3 minutes thought that they could not get out of the car and they were going to die there, that was a traumatic event for them. Where someone else may have been in the same accident and they did not have that experience. It just depends on how your brain processed it.
Okay. Now, the nature of PTSD is that we tend to continue thinking that we're in danger, even if we might not be. So you mentioned a child abuse situation. So the child might continue to act as if they're in danger when they grow up. They might be afraid of a partner or a friend or someone, you know, they just have that reaction, even though that initial abuser is no longer in the situation. So how can someone deal with a repeating pattern that the danger may not exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are therapies that have been created for dealing with these different traumas. Mm-hmm. EMDR is one of them. And then there's ACT therapy. There are different therapies that have been created to try and help the person through so that they can get to basically it's reprocessing. So that we're trying to get the amygdala to turn off the alarm, because basically that's what's happened. It's gotten stuck in that alarm state.
Okay.
Anything that's remotely the same, it says, okay, here we go again. And it sets off the alarm again and says, we're going through this again. And so the person ends up doing it again. And they think that this is what's happening again. It's just that it's stuck in that state of constant alarm. So like the eye movement reprocessing that EMDR does, it takes both sides of the brain, and it is a signaling of both sides of the brain alternately to try and get it to redo the trauma so that it is no longer activating the same way. But it takes time. And some people, they do 2 or 3 sessions. Other people, it's very quickly. Other people, it doesn't work at all. It is, you know, each person's brain is different. It's mm-hmm. a trial and error. So,
okay. So it's basically a process of turning off that constant fight or flight syndrome.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned mindfulness as a potential self-care practice. What other tips do you have for people to care for their own mental health at home?
Well, the biggest thing that I tell anyone for caring for yourself is caring for yourself. We all have a tendency to put everybody else first. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things I think we all of us therapists get taught in grad school is the oxygen mask analogy.
Yeah.
When you get on an airplane, when they tell you about putting on the oxygen mask, what's the first thing that they tell you?
Put it on yourself first.
Right, exactly. And that is because you're no good to anybody else if you're flopping around on the floor and you can't breathe.
Yeah.
Right? So it is imperative that you take care of yourself first before you can effectively take care of anyone else. And that means taking time out each and every day to do whatever that self-care is. That means you need to sit down, take some time out, and figure out what that is. If you're spiritual, then taking that time out with your spirituality, spending 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever that means for you. If it's meditation, then taking that time out. If it's going to a yoga class, if it's going to the gym, if it's taking 20 minutes out to read a book that you really enjoy and telling the kids, hey, this is mom time, this is dad time, or telling whomever, right? But mm-hmm. that's what you have. And this is what we call setting healthy boundaries. That's the most important thing. You have to have healthy boundaries. This is what I need for myself to function well. But you can't push that if you don't know what it is.
Right. Okay. What resources can you share where people could find out more about how to care for their own mental health?
Well, some of them would be NAMI. Is a really good one because you can connect with the National Alliance on Mental Health. You can connect with peers there. So there are people who may have the same lived experiences that you have. Mm-hmm. They have groups. And so it's really good to connect there. They're not quote unquote professionals. They're just other folks like everybody else. And they are there to help everybody else help everybody else.
Okay.
One of the other ones would be SAMHSA, is if you are dealing with, if you or you know someone who is dealing with some substance abuse or mental health issues, you can go on there. So SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Agency. It's a federal agency, but you can go on there. You can find treatment facilities for yourself or someone else. They have a locator, so you can put in like a zip code or your city, and it'll bring up all kinds of information for you. And then one of the other ones is the National Institute of Health also has a mental health aspect to it as well.
Okay. And where can people find out more about the Silver State Health Certified Community Behavioral Health Center?
So you can go to ssh-ccbhc.org, and you can find out more information about us there. There's all kinds of information there. We have our resources, the services we offer. You can even volunteer to help us if you'd like. We also have the youexistnv.org. So if you feel like you are in crisis, so then we have the crisis line. You can text exist to 741-741. And that is a text line, which research has found has been really good for adolescents because they quite often don't want to talk to an adult voice.
Mm-hmm.
So they found that that has been very helpful.
Okay, perfect. So once again, some of the resources, the National Alliance on Mental Illness or NAMI is at NAMI.org. That's NAMI.org. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration is at SAMHSA.gov, SAMHSA.gov. If you're in crisis, you can go to youexistnv.org or text exist to 741-741 to have a text chat session. And if you want to find out more about Silver State Health's Certified Community Behavioral Health Center, the website is ssh-ccbhc.org. That's ssh-ccbhc.org. And Cindy, I want to thank you so much for being here today and talking to us about mental health and behavioral health and some of the ways that people can improve their outlook and become healthy on all levels, a well-rounded individual. You've shared a wealth of information with us today, and I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing with us.
Thank you for doing this. This is so important for the community.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes, even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's YAP advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
I was in the hospital with my son for 18 months.
When he got injured, I wasn't prepared, but I knew I had to be strong.
When I was told about John's injury, I was in complete shock. I just remember rushing into his room and giving him a big hug and letting him know I was there.
These veterans and families are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For thousands of severely injured veterans, everyday life is filled with barriers.
It was really the little things throughout the house.
Counters that you can't roll up to.
I had to drag my wheelchair down steps.
I want to help, but he is so determined.
At Homes for Our Troops, we build specially adapted custom homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and automatic door openers that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family.
This house is freedom.
It's hope. It's a new beginning.
This house has given me my family back.
To learn more, visit hfotusa.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party. Upcoming shows include this Monday, November 21st at 8 p.m. at The Space, benefiting the Vegas Theater Company, and Monday, December 12th at 8 p.m. at The Palms to celebrate Monday's Dark's 9th anniversary. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. Touro University Nevada and the Nevada Homeless Alliance are partnering for Project Homeless Connect to serve the Las Vegas Valley's homeless and low-income population this Tuesday, November 22nd from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Silver Nugget Event Center, 2140 Las Vegas Boulevard North. Find out all the details or sign up to volunteer at NevadaHomelessAlliance.org. That's NevadaHomelessAlliance.org. Opportunity Village is holding their annual Magical Forest events from November 25th through December 31st at the Magical Forest on the Opportunity Village campus, 6300 West Oakey. Get your tickets and find out all the event times and dates at opportunityvillage.org. They also have the Great Santa Run fundraiser coming up on Saturday, December 3rd at 8 a.m. at the Fremont Street Experience, with a virtual option from December 4th to 24th. Sign up or find out more at opportunityvillage.org. That's opportunityvillage.org. And Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their second annual Trailblaze Challenge presented by Subaru of Las Vegas from February 3rd to 5th, 2023, with a 12-week training starting now. This is a 26.2-mile hike through the Valley of Fire backcountry in Mesquite with the goal of raising $300,000 to grant wishes for children with critical illnesses in Southern Nevada. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv/trailblaze. That's wish.org/snv/trailblaze.